Welcome to PS Let's Talk Love. I'm Marcia.
And I'm Solveig. We're communication professors and dating and relationship coaches. And in each episode, we'll be talking about dating, love, relationships, and all their complexities.
We're here to help you navigate the sometimes awful, sometimes exhilarating, and oftentimes bonkers elements of all things relationships.
We want to emphasize that this podcast is separate from our teaching and research at our university jobs. It is, however, part of our desire to bring dating and relationship support to folks everywhere.
Let's talk love.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the episode. We're going to start with what we love. Marcia, what are you loving this week?
I mean, I am loving Love is Blind.
Okay.
Are you watching it?
I hoped you wanted to talk about this. Listeners, if you've been following along, was that 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? We talked about the initial part of Love is Blind.
Yeah. And they have, so as of us recording, they have all the episodes out except for like the actual weddings and the reunion.
Potentially old news, but I feel like this cannot be talked about enough.
No, there's a lot. Are you all caught up?
Yes, I'm all caught up. I was like, I was hoping you wanted to talk about this. And also I've been watching it. So I was like, we need to make sure that we can talk about this today.
Yeah, there is a lot. I mean, here are my quick thoughts on it.
Yeah. What are some of the things you're loving or your hot takes?
So initially I had said, okay, I'll start with the good. Tiffany and Brett, the best. They are the best couple. I feel like I am watching true love. They are so emotionally mature. They are emotionally intelligent. They are grown-ups. I love that I think the very last episode, the one thing that her friend said is, my only concern is you guys, this is so fast. You haven't had a chance to like navigate any big conflicts. And I'm like, yes, that would be the exact same thing that I would say to a friend in that situation. Like, yeah, you guys seem great. But, you know, that is the thing to keep your eye on, right? Like, that was such good advice. And they're so delightful. I just love them so much. How do you feel about that?
I was like, yeah. I don't know if I'm, should I jump in? Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree. Totally agreed on all of those points. Like, they are so fun to watch. They're so sweet with one another and kind and just like all of the things one hopes for in a couple. And I agree that friend's advice was solid advice and a solid point. I mean, I think of course, we don't know what's going to happen, but I feel like they did have a couple, was it in this? Anyways, it's all kind of blending together, but you know, I mean, it is very fast. It's a very fast amount of time to have to make a decision about a marriage. And so, you know, I think it makes it look like with the editing for what's happening next. And of course, like we said, if you're listening, you've probably seen what happens next and we don't know yet, but like, it makes it look like there's some sort of drama coming up between them. But I'm wondering if that's just editing or also if it is like, hey, maybe let's not get married right away. Like you had said,
I think it's 100% editing. I think she's crying because she's like happy and also overwhelmed. Like the only thing she's been upset about is like something that I really related to is she's just seemed like really overwhelmed with like all of the wedding of it all, right? And like getting family and probably also the added element of like, you know, having to film and have it all on camera and explain to people in your life like this is the situation, right? Like that is inherently stressful. Yeah, planning a wedding full stop is super stressful. And she was crying. And at one point she goes, I just like, don't even want to have a wedding. Or she said something kind of to that. And I feel like the editors were trying to be like, dun, dun, dun. I'm like, no, she's saying she doesn't want a big wedding. She did not say, I don't want to get married. Yeah. And I think that language is important.
So no, they seem real good.
They seem great. I think that they're going to get married. And I think this is my prediction, hot take. I think they're going to have the first Love is Blind baby.
They're so sweet together and they make, and even just like in each of their meeting one another's family and, you know, other friends and things, it just seems really solid. It seems like such a good match. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yes, we agree.
What else? We love that. Okay. Next couple, Kwame and Chelsea. Ooh, I don't know what's going to happen with these two. I kind of think they shouldn't get married, is my feeling. I don't know. I also get so people online really, really love Chelsea. Mm-hmm. I like her a lot. The most recent batch of episodes, there was a tough section where they're at the store and she's trying on clothes and then they're eating strawberry. Oh,
yeah. It was weird. That was weird. Yeah.
Ooh. What I'm worried about is if she is someone who is choosing not to like acknowledge the problems, like she is just ignoring big, at the very least, yellow flags, if not red flags in the situation. Yeah. And I'm scared that that's what's happening. And it felt like that was happening in like full effect in that at that point in the episode.
Yeah, I mean, she seems so headstrong with like, this is what we're doing. I'm ready for this. I love him. Like, and on one hand, I like appreciate her clarity. I mean, she's very clear about what she wants, yeah. But it did feel like, are you noticing his nonverbal communication at all? Like, are you listening to him? And sort of could be the editing, right? But the whole sort of like, are you going to marry me even if your mom doesn't approve stuff seems pretty intense. Like her sort of, I mean, those are fair questions. I don't blame her for asking those questions, but also, I actually think like, it seems like they're going to get married. It seems like he's going to say yes. And especially once, you know, at the very end of what I watched, his sister showed up and his brother showed up and his sister seems really cool. And like that seemed like they seemed very like supported in terms of their families, both being like, you know, even what her dad was saying to her as he was like starting to walk her down the aisle. Like they do seem to have a lot of, aside from his mom, they seem to have a lot of support for like, yes, do this, which I'm sure is a strength in a marriage to have people like that around you, like fully supporting it. But I don't know that he's ready for this.
I don't know that he loves her.
I know.
It's
hard to, I mean, I think he likes her. I mean, I think he likes her. He said multiple times that he admires her, like, something. I can't remember what he admires, but he's like said that he admires some things about her. And yeah,
I just, what I see is it's really hard to tell based on editing if it is she is kind of a bulldozer, mm-hmm. or if he is unwilling to like make any changes, because he keeps talking about his place in Portland. And I'm like, dude, you joined a show that is based out of Seattle. Like, you had to have known that this was like a possibility. And also, your job is remote, hers is not. She has a bunch of family there. I got the impression that his family does not live in Portland.
I got that impression also. Yeah, I mean, I didn't accept that, but that was the impression I got. Yeah,
the way they talked, it sort of seemed that way. And then he was like, my running path is in Portland, my soccer group is in Portland, and look, y'all know I love to run. I love a routine.
True.
That was some bullshit. True. Seattle has excellent running path. You can't tell me that there are not a bazillion soccer leagues in Seattle, in the Seattle area. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Like, no. No.
Yeah. It does seem like he's maybe trying to find some ways out, right? Like, I mean, it seems like, because it doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal.
No, my prediction for them is that they probably will get married. And I predict that if they got married, I don't know exactly when this filmed. Like, I don't know when this was. I saw at some point she had a Christmas tree up kind of in a corner, and I couldn't tell if it was a Christmas tree or just a decorative thing. Hmm. So I'm like, is it around December-ish? My prediction is that they got married and they already are like separated.
Yeah.
By the reunion.
Yeah. I would guess so too. It doesn't look like it's going to work unless he has some major attitude shift. And I mean, I do think his point about him having to compromise a lot is true. Like, I mean, she is, you know, it does seem like she's asking a lot of him in terms of compromising or making changes in his life. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he either like fully jumps on board and is like, all right, I'm ready to be married, or he just doesn't even seem ready to be married. To me, he just doesn't even seem ready to be married. I'm like, it's
he doesn't seem very,
you're not ready.
He doesn't seem very mature, like looking at his apartment and the way that his things that he pointed to were his running path and his soccer group and the way he's handling his mom. It's hard. It would be really interesting to hear what his mom was saying. I wish we had more context there. But all in all, it makes me nervous. And I generally like Chelsea a lot. And I think she seems delightful, and she like knows what she wants, and she's kind of a boss bitch. But here's what I didn't love, though. The last thing I'll say, I didn't love last that what? Photo shoot. The last
oh,
thing
I
I'll
know.
Say,
oh, I know.
It was so uncomfortable to so watch. Uncomfortable.
I just was like, this is what you've dreamt of your entire life? Interesting. I mean, I know people are all different, so like, okay. Yeah.
It was tough. It was tough to watch. It was not. I also was like, are you going to wear like some sexy lingerie too? No, just the Calvin Klein's? Okay. I mean, Calvin Klein's are sexy, I do think, but I just, when she was explaining the vision to the photographer and there was a bed there, I was like, is this photographer like, fuck my life?
Assume the photographer knew what they were getting themselves into. Yeah, I mean, they're both beautiful people. I was just like, this is uncomfortable and I don't really want to watch it, but I don't know, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, to each their own. It's fine. Not my own.
Opinion. Yeah. And you know what? I actually really like Kwame a lot. I like, maybe unpopular opinion, but I kind of like him. I think he's pretty cool. I just think he's young and like maybe not actually ready to get married, or he doesn't really like Chelsea, or he's whatever's happening for him. I don't know. I think he seems all right.
I am not a fan.
No.
Given the way he has talked about and interacted with Micah post pods, like the two interactions they had were way too flirty. I thought it was super disrespectful to Chelsea. This guy, there are a lot of red flags for me with him. There is a lot going on with him that I'm like, what are you doing, bro?
I'm not saying there aren't red flags for him getting married. I don't know. I guess I'm going to go back to the fact that like I agree that it's like, I don't think he was appropriate in terms of how he interacted with Micah, but I do think it must be really difficult to get to know people so much. And then like, just the whole setup to me, like if I were to just give him the benefit of the doubt, and again, I'm not defending his behavior, but just like, you know, I mean, you have a genuine connection with two different people. You see the other, I mean, he's clearly attracted to Micah. Like that's gotta be really complicated to be like, well, I chose this person, but I'm also attracted who, and I mean, she's not making it. It's not like she's super clear in her boundaries. Micah's also like talking to him.
Yeah, I just that I mean, I also dislike Micah quite a bit. I have plenty to say about her, but I think neither of them acted well. I just like, I don't, he could have, I think like the thing is, Brett had a whole conversation with him about no, man, you could have just done X, Y, and Z. And I was like, yes, exactly. Yes. You can go be like, hey, it's like, good to meet you, that we had a real, you know, you can talk about those things in a respectful way. Mm-hmm. But there was two instances where it was very flirty. They were touching. It just, I'm like, no, bro, that was not cool. And I think it was even worse that it kind of happened a second time.
Yeah.
The first time I could give like a little bit like, hey man, you fucked up, but it's weird. Everyone's drinking. Okay.
Yeah.
Second time around, no. And I kind of feel like Chelsea seeing the whole thing on camera, probably if they weren't already separated, would cause a lot of problems. Because if I saw Dustin acting like that, I would be like, what the fuck? Who do you think you are?
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I don't want to in any way excuse like that. I mean, I guess I'm saying, I think I can understand. This is me. This is what I do. I'm like compassionate for people probably to a fault. Sometimes I can understand why, but I don't agree with the behavior either.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk about
if you're not ready to be married, don't join a show that the whole premise is to get married. Yeah. Right. Like he can move through the world acting like that. I think that's why I am a little more critical of it. Is like, you knew the deal, dude. Like, this is the whole point. If you weren't ready, then don't join the show. Just go date and run on your path.
You're down. That's fair. What do you think about Micah and Paul? Is that his name, Paul?
Yeah.
You think they're going to get married?
I don't think they are.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, probably not. I also just don't think they should. They just don't seem totally compatible to me. I mean, it is weird that she looks a lot like his mom. Like, that is a weird, weird thing considering the experiment.
Yeah.
That's a strange thing. And maybe, like, it does seem like they have some family support for it, but they seem quite different. And her friends are atrocious.
So she's an example of the company you keep.
Yes.
Reflects a lot about you. Ugh. And the people she is aligned with are awful.
They're awful.
That one friend is terrible. She is such an asshole.
Do you think she's just doing that so she can get more time on TV? Because that's, I mean, I'm like, this is like,
I mean, I don't care if that is a reason. If that is, right, like either way,
you know,
she's
I know.
To act that way. I'm like, that, no. It's
I'm like, so bad. So bad. I mean, that would be enough. If I met someone's friends, I think if I were Paul, I'd be like, no, thank you.
I know. And Paul doesn't seem totally sold at times either. He made a comment where he was like, she meets the minimum qualifications for a wife. And I was like, buddy, I know you want to really play up that you're a scientist, but that was not great phrasing.
He's really analytical, clearly, right? I mean, at least that's how they're showing him. That's how they're making him seem. Yeah, he seems... yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's going to work. I really hope it doesn't. That's another person who I'm like, go, just all of them, just go grow up a little bit. It's okay. You just don't need to get married right now.
They're too. I think that this show really would be better if they focused on people who were over the age of 32.
Yeah. Agreed. So
you,
agreed.
Right. I think it would be like, if that's really the goal of the show is to
actually
see if love is blind and like actually like be a little bit more earnest about it, then I think that they really should limit it to people over the age of 30. I'll say over the age of 30. But yeah, they're too young. When he described the women he used to date, he was like, they're usually like granola-y, like witches. And I was like, yes. I'm thinking in terms of Alaska. I'm like, Paul, you need to come to Girdwood and meet a girl.
Seriously.
Like, that's exactly who would be a perfect match for you. I was like, you were on the right track. You should find somebody like that. That seems exactly perfect for you.
Yes. Paul, come to Alaska.
Yeah. You would do great
in
Alaska.
We need some more interesting single people here. You're welcome. Micah, you're not.
Go to Arizona. Arizona is a great place for you.
Oh my gosh.
Please
okay.
take your friends there. I don't want them near Alaska.
So then we've got, well, I mean, Jackie and Marshall, probably not worth discussing, except do you have anything to say about that? Other people who have already fallen apart, rightfully so.
Yeah, I'm glad that they broke up. I
Me
think
too.
Jackie was being a real asshole. I really wanted to root for her.
Initially.
She said something at the very end. I think it was the last little talking head thing that she did. She's like, maybe I need to go work on myself. Or she kind of made some comment about that. And I was like, yes, that's the best thing you've said this whole show.
Yes.
You need to do that. You need therapy.
Yes. Girl. Oh, take care of yourself for a little while. Don't date that other guy, by the way. Like, that's not good. That's not a good choice. Just go take care of yourself for a while.
I know.
So whatever she thinks.
Yeah, I think she self-sabotaged because Marshall was actually like a very
really nice
good
yes.
guy. Yeah.
Sure seemed like that. She like
granted,
imploded.
Yes. Granted, he maybe could have not called her a project.
Yeah, no, that wasn't cool. Yeah, I mean, but it was falling apart at that point. It was probably like yeah. And I really like him. I wish him well. He seems
I think he will find someone. He seems like very nice. I think that he needs to make sure he picks somebody that he doesn't feel like he needs to save.
Yeah.
Like, I think he needs somebody who is as emotionally mature as him, because that's what I saw with him and Jackie, is like, I'm going to save her from like dating douchebags and I'm going to be a good man. And like, you can't save somebody from themselves.
I kind of wish that he and Bliss had connected, because I feel like they could have been really cool together. Like, she seems pretty emotionally mature to me, and like, she I mean, clearly they didn't connect, but at least we didn't see that connection. But mm-hmm. A couple times I've thought, oh, why didn't they connect?
I think that he even said, there was a little scene where he said something to Brett about Tiffany. He was like, yeah, like I knew Tiffany was like such a good woman, but she's just a little old for me, which Marshall was like 26, 27. I think he's, you know, younger.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. Like, so he could pick out somebody who was like, you know, had their shit together, but he wasn't interested in that. And I'm like, I think he needs
to grow up a little bit too.
Just a little bit. I think in like, he probably after that experience, he's probably been through enough to pick better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Oh gosh. Good luck, Marshall. Good luck. Good luck, Jackie, too.
We're rooting for you.
Go get some help. I don't mean to say it in a diminishing way. Go work on yourself. You are correct. However you would choose to do that, go.
I'm going to plug a therapist. Not that I think that she's listening to this, but Jackie, I think you would really benefit from therapy because you have some like really wonderful traits that I think would make you a good match. But right now you got to work on it, girl.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What is the last one? The last one, Zach and Bliss. Are we missing?
Yeah.
How do you feel about them?
I don't
know. Listeners, she's like leaning towards the microphone. Looking, is that exhausted? I can't tell what that look is. What is that look?
I don't know. I mean, I think that they're actually an okay match. I think they are both weird.
Yeah.
And I think somehow that weirdness is connecting. What's tough for me is, and again, this is probably editing, that he keeps being like, we have so much chemistry. And then it's like them sitting there like really awkwardly and him making this very intense eye contact. And I'm like, really? Do you? Because I'm not seeing that. Tiffany and Brett, chemistry.
Yes. Yes.
Kwame and Micah, chemistry? But you two.
That's funny. Yeah. I mean, they do seem like they have found a weirdness in one another that they appreciate. I don't think they're gonna get married.
I think they are.
You do? I think she's gonna say no.
I think they're going to.
She's so measured in what she says, and I don't know if that's because she's just being cautious, but like even when she said to her dad, the one in the last scenes I saw, like she said to her dad, well, I'm in love with him now or something like that. And I was like, well, that's something now. And I was like, well, that's a weird way of saying that.
I don't know. I think because she like said yes to the proposal, which I would have bet $1 million that she would not say yes to him.
Right. I thought she was going to say no.
I did too.
Thank you so much, but no thanks. I just didn't go on this boat. Thought a boat ride sounded nice.
I'm shocked. I don't understand it, but they do seem to have some compatibleness with their weirdness. Her dad also was a real asshole to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was rough.
Yeah.
She knew that was coming though, because she had kept, like, she had alluded to that for sure.
Yeah. I just hope Zach's cooler than he's getting edited to look like.
I do think he has gotten a bad edit. Just having like perused a little bit of Love is Blind TikTok. So just as an example, he sings a song, which in the pods, which was really cringy. This is a PSA. This is a PSA to everyone. Nobody wants to hear you sing. Unless you are like an actual musician and on a stage for that purpose. Please don't. I'm also speaking to all of those dudes in college who would pull out a fucking guitar and sing Jack Johnson songs. It's so cringy. It's so uncomfortable. No. I'm sure that
I have to say it kind of worked for me, but not Zach's. But I have to slightly beg to differ, but I do get the point. His song was cringy. But you can play your guitar in front of me.
Oh my God. Ew. Well, don't pull the guitar out at parties is what I want.
Not at Marsha's house. At Solveig's house, yes, you can.
Yeah. Not if you pull a guitar out at my house, I will break the guitar.
But yes, unless... to the point of Zach and his song, I saw this on TikTok too.
People were like, oh, it's from this band who I'm now forgetting the name of. Sorry, band. It was like a, you know,
Ludo, I think.
Ludo. Like, I think that's right. I think you're right. Anyway, people were like, it's his song or it's the band song. He said it, he sang it or he wrote it. And he was like, guys, this was like the editors did him dirty on that.
I agree.
The scene, he actually shared he got the unedited version and shared that. Did you see that?
I saw that too. And I was like, good job. Good job standing up for yourself in something that like was edited in a way that made you look dumb.
Yeah. And so listeners, if you didn't happen to see that, he very clearly was like, it's from my favorite band. And I just changed some words to make it Irina's song. Like he very clearly made it evident that he did not write that song. So I think like given that, I'm like, all right, well, what other, like he is getting that edit. Like we know he's getting like the weirdo edit. So I'm interested in, but he also seems kind of like a weirdo.
I know. Both. It's like, I don't feel wholeheartedly like, yes, bliss, marry him. Like you two are so cute and quirky and weird together. I feel like, maybe both of you just like date for a while longer. Could you just date for a while longer? Like maybe you are perfect for one another. But you know, I was like the last part, I mean, you know, I love Signs, but I was like, when he was like, the signs, they're there. It's perfect. We both like the same song. I mean, I agree. That's like special and neat. You know, they both like the same song and she said an owl would come to her. What did he say about owls? I don't know.
He had like he had an owl on his tie clip that day.
Oh, is that what he did? Okay, because he also has a big owl in his house, right? Like, I'm like, okay, I mean, I like those things just like anybody else, but I don't know if those are reasons to get married.
I mean, also, I Hope You Dance by Leanne Womack is one of the most common wedding songs.
That's right. That's the song.
His friend, I mean, it's a lovely song. I understand why it is in wedding so much. It's perfect. But when his friend's like, that's not a common song, that's a rare song, I was like, shut up. It's like the most used song in
oh my gosh. I did think it was interesting. I mean, I thought it was really interesting when they had the bachelor party and he was like, I am not really into strippers. My mom was a stripper. I thought that, I wish they had spent just like a little more time on that. Like, I thought that was an interesting moment. And I was like, what an interesting like experience for a person to have and like be thinking about. That was interesting to me.
Yeah. I appreciated that he voiced it and did, and also didn't seem to ruin everyone else's time also.
No, I didn't. I mean, I think he was just like, I'm not really into this, but I don't think he was like, nobody enjoy this burlesque show. It didn't look like that. It looked like he was just like, this is not really my thing.
Yeah. I thought that that was one of the more endearing things about him that I found was when he said that, like, I was like, oh yeah, sorry, buddy.
Yeah.
Maybe you guys should have picked a different activity. I appreciated they were at like a burlesque show and not, you know, it felt kind of classy and I respected that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. It's also just been fun, like seeing like Seattle kind of like in the way that like it's fun to see Anchorage, right? It's like fun to see a city that you have been to. Well, Love is Blind. We look forward to seeing what's going to happen next.
All right, listeners. Oh my gosh, we are on the season finale of Ted Lasso season 2. So this is episode 12, season 2 of Ted Lasso, Inverting the Pyramid of Success. A quick recap of this episode. The team is facing their final matchup of the season. Promotion is on the line. Ted is dealing with the fallout from Trent Crim's article about his panic attack and attempting a measured approach to Nate. Roy miraculously forgives Jamie and wrestles with his feeling singular feeling. Healy gets a badass professional opportunity. Nate finally voices his anger to Ted. Sam decides to stay at Richmond. Trent Krim is now independent. And finally, Nate joins evil forces of Rupert at West Ham United. That's a quick summary. There's a lot of things that happened in this episode.
There were. Great summary.
And as we were looking at a theme for this, I mean, I think that this is a theme for the entire show as well, but I feel like there were some really specific opportunities for characters to make choices in this episode, which makes sense for a season finale. And so we really are looking at this under the theme of choices reveal our character, which is basically what Ted says at one point in this episode too. So we have lots of characters. I feel like there was a lot of small stories throughout. Yeah. So I don't know that we have anyone that we're going to spend a ton of time on, but I feel like we've got to talk about a lot of people.
Lots of choices. Lots of choices and characters.
Yes. Yeah. People are making a lot of choices. So who do we want to start with? Who do you want to start with?
Yeah, let's start with Sam and maybe Sam and Rebecca together.
Right. Rebecca didn't have to make a lot of choices. I guess she kind of made her choice at the end of last episode when she told Sam she wanted him to stay.
Yes. Rebecca's there too. Okay. In terms of Sam, we, you know, at the end of the last episode, just like you said, we saw him wrestling with making a choice mm-hmm. to either stay with Richmond or to take this, you know, offer, which is clearly quite tempting with billionaire Edwin Akufu to go play on a team that he was purchasing. So we see this at the beginning of this episode. We see that he has gotten a jersey with his name and a new number on it. Was there significance in that? Did that mean something to you?
So I heard somebody talking about how numbers in football, like oftentimes like better players will have lower numbers. Yeah, maybe just that like he would be the star player. Maybe that's what that means.
I was wondering if it signified something like that. Yeah. You're my local sports authority. So I mean, maybe Marcia knows. In any case, we see that he's continuing to be wooed by Edwin Akufu and thinking mm-hmm. about what choice he's going to make. We see him on the phone with his dad chatting about it, right? And his dad, I really like the conversations with his dad. And, you know, in this case, his dad told him to trust the universe, right? To trust mm-hmm. the signs.
Yeah, he specifically said, stop looking for the answer and stop searching for the answer and just wait for the answer to come to you. Or I'm paraphrasing, but essentially that's what he said, right? He's basically like, let the universe tell you. And of course, in perfect cinematic fashion at that moment, Sam looks over to some children playing in the park and sees them wearing his jersey. And I think specifically seeing them wearing his jersey with the black tape over the Dubai Air logo. I feel like that was the moment where he like was really able to acknowledge the impact he's having on the community there. And that like, perhaps his work specifically there and being able to like, spread his message and spread what he cares about in that environment is what he needs to be doing. Like, it seemed like that was his answer. That's how I interpreted it.
I interpreted it similarly, that it was an affirmation of, you know, the contributions he was making there and that they meant something to him. I mean, it definitely, mm-hmm. yes, it definitely looked like it meant something to him and did just come right after his dad said to look for messages from the universe. So do you think he makes that decision then? Do you think he makes it in his heart right then? Or what do you think? What choice?
I think so. I think that like he seems to trust his dad. And I think that like he is leaning into, or at that moment, he finally leans into like, okay, I'm going to like be open to the information I need to make the right decision. Like the universe should tell me, and the universe like showed him that what he had done had major impact. And I think it also reminded him that he had had impact, and that maybe in this environment, he also is given respect and a platform. And I think like he trusts Ted in this, right? Like if we're to look at his two options, it's Edwin Akufo and Ted. And Ted at every step has like been trustworthy and supported him and given him a platform and respected him. And Edwin Akufo, like, he's got a lot of like dazzle, but he doesn't always seem like the most trustworthy.
Yeah. Yes, certainly. I was watching, I was thinking about that because I think zoom forward, I'm trying to think if there was anything else important sort of in his storyline. The next thing that I remember that where we really see Sam is doing really well in the game. And then the end of the game, you know, him being one of the key players in that game and how they did in the game. And then, you know, the team just like cheering, like that, not only Isaac touching the believe sign and them all connecting around that, but then the cheering and the we're Richmond till we die. I was like, how could I remember thinking as I was watching this most recently, oh, that would be so hard to leave even that, like that also, you know, that sort of team space would be really hard to like leave that in exciting energy and then say, hey, I'm going to go join a new team. I mean, I'm sure it happens all the time in sport, but it's like, it would be hard.
Well, it's interesting, I think, because Sam and Keely are in some ways, I know this is, I'm not going to talk about Keely too much, but they are actually presented with almost identical opportunities. He, because the whole thing with this other team is like, he would be the, like the core of that team. I think what I'm remembering is that Edwin Akufo is like going to basically start up a club from scratch and
or buy a team that is
I haven't looked up
whether Casablanca is a team or not. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and Sam would be like the cornerstone player in that, right? Like he is, that was the message that
that's how he's presenting it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think like that's sort of similar to what Keely is being presented with. And like, they're both in a situation of like, okay, do I stay with the place that I am more comfortable and I have this known thing? And I think like the cool thing about the way that they, you know, they had opposite decisions, right? Sam chose to stay because he did feel like he still had more work. And I think arguably had more opportunity to grow in that space. Like he wasn't quite ready to maybe leave it and strike out on his own essentially, or be the cornerstone player somewhere else. Whereas Keely is at a point where like she kind of has outgrown this position that she's in, even though there is so much comfort and safety in remaining in a place like that, right? That is nurturing and everyone is trustworthy. So I just think it's kind of an interesting way that those two stories are like the same decision and they make different choices out of it.
Yeah, that's a great point. And they're on, in some ways, a parallel journey through this episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So Sam decides to stay.
But not because of Rebecca.
Not because of Rebecca. Edwin Akufo does not take it well.
I feel like that the way that Edwin Akufo reacted is like sort of what we all, I mean, at least I anticipated like the turn that Ted, I thought was going to happen with Ted at some point. Like I was like in the first season. Yeah, in the first season, he's so nice. And you're like, when is the other shoe going to drop? When is the other shoe going to drop? And Edwin Akufo comes in and you're like, well, the show, like there doesn't ever seem to be another shoe. So I guess he's just kind of eccentric. And then the other shoe drops and he's bonkers.
Yeah. Yeah. He is not in his emotional adulthood as he leaves that conversation. He does not take it well, and he's pretty nasty to Sam along the way.
Yeah, he doesn't like Sam feels deal more with rejection.
Yeah, he does not deal with rejection well, right? And I feel like Sam feels, if I were Sam, I'd be like, I made the right choice.
Yeah. I thought it was an interesting scene. Did you catch how Higgins was watching that interaction happen?
A bit. Yes, I did notice right, he's watching. Yes.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting how it's like this mirror image of what happened last season in the final episode where Ted is watching Jamie's dad yelling at him. Like, it's kind of a like shot in a similar way where Ted's looking through the window and he's seeing the interaction between Jamie and his dad is yelling at him. And in this case, Higgins is watching through the window and it's Sam and Edwin Okufu is screaming at him. And I'm like, oh, it's like sort of this mirror image. I mean, it's like different tonally, I think. The Sam one is much more humor, is played for humor, and the Jamie one is played for like sadness.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, that's kind of cool how they did that mirroring. Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then do you want to say anything else about that? Or should we talk about what Sam says to Ted?
That whole interaction was real awkward.
Oh, it's so good. It's so well acted.
Yeah. So Sam goes and tells Ted, more likely Rebecca, that he is staying, but that it's not necessarily because of her.
Yeah.
Which is hard to hear.
Yeah. But also probably best for both of them in that moment, given what they both need from that situation. I mean, at this point, she's said that she can't do this and he's having to make decisions. He shouldn't make a decision for her. He should make a decision for him.
Yeah.
And I think she knows that, even though she did go and tell him that she wanted him to stay, right? Like, I mean, there's a push and pull going on there. And, but yeah, he said, I'm staying because it's what's best for me and my personal journey. Mm-hmm. So we see that he's made that choice. And then we see so cool at the end that he's bought that restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like making it home. The other moment with him that I thought, like, it was when Ted was talking about choices we make, like he was giving that speech on the field and he said something like, you know, first it was like a joke about Greek yogurt. Like, am I about to eat something called Greek yogurt? Or am I about to take a job halfway across the world or leave my family and take a job halfway across the world? Right. He said something basically like that. And the camera panned to Sam for a second and like acknowledging, like, I think that that's where he likely was torn of like, okay, well, what, either way, I'm leaving my family. Right. Mm-hmm. Like he in Richmond is away from his parents and family in Nigeria. Right. He's Nigerian. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if he was to leave and go to this other club, he'd be leaving his Richmond family who like, so either way, he's making a decision to leave his family or stay away from his family. And instead chooses to stay and like create more family there, it seems like, with that restaurant.
Yeah. And really honor his heritage too. Like if we're thinking, or, you know, not only his heritage, but like his ethnicity, his culture, you know, like all of that. It seems like if we're thinking about this idea that choices reveal character, you know, to me, I'm also, just to go back to how he responds when Edwin Okufu freaks out, he's very poised. He's very calm. He seems self-assured. Like there are things about the maturity. I think we've talked a lot this season about the maturity that Sam displays. And I think he does that a lot in this episode of making mature choices for himself that are kind to himself and also seems to be like have a really good sense of other people's character as well. Like he seems really emotionally intelligent.
He does. Yeah. I wonder if this is the show showing us that like a supportive father figure can really do wonders.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The last thing I have to say about Sam, and just to go back to that scene in the park where he's watching the kids, the line that kept popping into my head is a line from the musical Hamilton. And it's this line, what is a legacy? It's planting seeds in a garden you never get to see. And I think about that a lot in education, but I also was thinking about that in that scene. And I was like, a lot of times you do things hoping that at some point in the future, it is going to pay off. Right. And he like is getting this little glimpse. It's like he's getting to see the little sprouts of the seeds And I just thought that, like, that's what kept echoing in my head while I was watching that scene this time.
I'm glad you shared that. Oh, Sam, we love you.
We love you. And also, please put that guy in a rom-com. He's so delightful. I just, this is my one-woman pitch.
I can't stop thinking about it. Now that you said it, I can't stop thinking about
it. He would be so good in a rom-com. He could be in, like, you know that anthology, the Love Life that had Anna Kendrick one season and William Jackson Harper? I want him in that. Like a British version. I can see it. I'll write it if anyone wants to pay me to.
I'm into this.
I have zero experience.
But a lot of relationship knowledge.
Yeah, thanks. I feel like I could do it.
Yeah.
Hit me up. Okay, well,
Go ahead.
Maybe moving on then to Keely, because they have such parallel stories. She's presented with this really exciting opportunity to start her own PR firm. I will say, so when it seems she got this news out of nowhere via email, to which I was like, really? Via email? Like, they didn't, I feel like this would have been a meeting. I'm just being like kind of like picky about it, but I was just like, this doesn't feel like it would have been an email. Like, what did that email say?
Yeah. Well, it was the same venture capitalist who was investing in Banter, right? I think I tracked that right. And so I was like, maybe they're in touch a lot. And this was just the next email in the email chain.
What if it's Rupert?
Oh no. I thought you were gonna say
Edwin Akuva.
Gosh. Oh no, I hadn't
there
thought
are
of
only it like three people in this universe.
Yeah. I thought you were gonna say, would you believe it if you got an email out of the blue?
Would you? I would be.
I would like to fund you. Spam. Hello. I would like to fund you
in
your own.
I'm a Nigerian prince.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Keely's very trusting.
Mm-hmm. But presumably she knows the contact. Anyways, she's super excited about it. And it seems like she's made that choice immediately. Like, whereas it seems like Sam was really struggling with the choice for her, it seemed like a full body yes in many ways. I mean, maybe mm-hmm. she was worried about the people who love her and how they would feel about it. But for her, it seemed a very clear yes to me.
Yeah, there was not really any wrestling with like, what should I do? It was like, yes, it's an immediate yes. And yeah, there will be a little bit of, I suppose, fallout, but not even in a negative way. But yes, it seems she is all in, which is very cool. Like, we are really seeing Keely go from being, she's kind of like a model personality at the start of the first season. And now she's starting her own business, like a significant business.
Yeah. And was it in the, I can't remember, a couple episodes ago when she and Nate were having that conversation about being their own boss and stuff, right? I mean, she's got this opportunity and she's going for it. And she also, you know, we know that we can see that she feels nervous to talk to Rebecca, but, you know, it's also, if we think about choices revealing character, she's really straightforward with Rebecca. She goes to her right away. I mean, their friendship is so beautiful in so many ways, but I think even despite the power dynamic and despite everything else, she is like, as soon as she can, it seems like going to talk to Rebecca to be clear about the choice she's going to make.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supportive of each other. Go right. Rebecca, you. Go Rebecca, go both of them.
Well, and I think like that's one of the things this show I think does really well is, and maybe this is a little bit of like wish fulfillment, right? Is people tend to be quite forthcoming and direct about how they're feeling with the others on the show. And like, if they fuck up, they say it and they apologize. And like, I think we oftentimes see depictions of like this type of story in media where then she like keeps it a secret because she doesn't want to tell Rebecca and she's scared that what will happen. And then Rebecca finds out from someone else and then it's a whole conflict, right? Like, I feel like I have seen that play out in so many different shows and movies. And so to see like kind of the opposite of that, which is really the ideal, because when you trust people, you trust that they are going to be able to handle the information that you are presenting them with. And they believe that you are coming from like a good and kind place, right? Like that's the best, that's the ideal when it comes to good communication. And so seeing that, like this, I know that these are small interactions, but like it just reinforces like this is what healthy communication between friends or in a workplace can look like. And it's a delight to witness.
It is. And going back to that theme of choices reveal character, both of them are making generous, supportive choices in that situation. Not only Keely going to tell Rebecca, but then Rebecca responding, you know, with tears and hugs and being like, oh my gosh, hire your best friend. That's the advice to give, you know, I mean, it is, they're both making choices to reveal like not only the psychological safety that they've created between one another in that friendship, but it seems like a real generosity of spirit for both of them.
Yeah. I will say, I don't know if Rebecca gave like the best. I don't know if hiring your best friend is like the most solid business advice.
I've thought about that too. I think about it every time I listen to that scene. I'm like, is that true? I think it's more than one thing could be true, right? It worked out in this situation.
It totally worked in this situation, but I am like, I feel like the Higgins, you know how he like,
yeah.
I want to be like counterpoint.
Do you have a situation where you've, is this from personal experience?
I feel like I want to be like, I don't know that that's like the most solid advice, right? Like, think about that for a second, Keely. Maybe not, or don't. It just seems like that, like, in listeners, if like, the reason I say that is just because sometimes complicating relationships, like it's one thing to have a personal relationship with someone, it's another thing to also have a business relationship with someone, it's a whole nother thing to be somebody's supervisor, right? Like it complicates relationships, and I think you shouldn't do that without at least some thought behind it. Don't just willy-nilly hire your best friend. That's all I'm saying.
I wholeheartedly agree, and I don't have any negative personal experiences that I can think of with that, but I agree that every time I watch this episode, I always pause on it and think, do I think that's true? I just have like a question mark when I hear it in my mind. And so I think yes, I like the like counterpoint, or at least thoughtfully hire your best friend.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the intention behind that line, because I always am like, I think the intention is for Rebecca to like say unequivocally that they are best, like they have become best friends, right? And like that she has, like it is saying, if we're talking about like relational level message, it's saying so much more than hire your best friend. It's saying like, you are my best friend. I'm so glad that I was able to work with you. You have been like made this better. And right. Like there's so much more to that message. It just is like funny that it's coming out in that way. Cause I'm like, no, wait.
Yeah. So maybe the real thing that she's, I mean, cause also just in like building that out even further. I mean, they weren't best friends when Rebecca hired her. So that I think is also relevant here. Right. Like, hire someone and you'll be so lucky if they become your best friend too.
Much better. I like that way better. Way better.
Okay. Yeah. Well, in either case, they are both super kind to one another about this transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Keely seems really all in on this. Like she shares it with Roy, and we're going to talk about Roy a bit more on his own, but I mean, she does the same thing with Roy as she did with Rebecca, right? Was very straightforward, was direct. Arguably, it doesn't impact him in the same way it does Rebecca. But he, you know, again, trusting people to respond you know, he is like super supportive and she receives that. And I think like what we're then seeing with Keely, as we're seeing like her storyline wrap up this season, is that she really like her journey is about creating this identity for herself as a professional woman and like being known for something more than just her looks, right? Like that sort of has been her journey these last two seasons. And she's really getting to a point where she's able to realize that and is dedicating herself to that identity shift, which is like, it's very exciting to see that specifically a female character, like that her real, like her primary storyline isn't actually her relationship. Like we love Roy and Keely, but like the thing she is focusing on is her professional development right now.
Yeah. And that's exciting for her. And she seems really clear on that. I mean, clear enough to say no to a 6-week vacation by the beach with Roy.
I was like, I'll take it.
I'm not sure I agreed with her choice there, but I respect her commitment and excitement about her job.
But I get it, right?
Yeah, like, no, I get it too.
You have to strike while the iron is hot, right? Like, I also think she has a perspective with Roy of like, he's going to be there.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think that. And I don't know if it's necessarily like taking him for granted, but I do think she has this like, he's going to be there. That isn't even something I have to worry about. The professional opportunities, I need to like take advantage now.
And it's interesting. I mean, I know we're about to talk about Roy too, but it's interesting how she, it seems, I mean, I'm not sure how you interpreted this, but in that, you know, one of, I think it is their final scene, where he's worrying, are we going to break up? It seems like he's genuinely worried, are we going to break up? And she doesn't seem worried to me in that moment. She's just like, no, like you're going to go away for 6 weeks. Like that's a thing people do.
Yeah, that was the impression I got. I mean, I do think what we are seeing is that her priority right now is not her relationship. Her primary priority is her professional life, right? Her, this business she is getting ready to build. And like, you know, that is sometimes the ebb and flow of a relationship. It also can mean the termination of a relationship, like depending on where the other person is. Like, it's not great to hear, you are not my priority, this professional opportunity is. These are two people with competing needs right now and at different places in their life too. I think that is significant that Keely is sort of on this like upshot, right? Mm-hmm. She's moving up on an upswing in her life professionally. And like Roy is maybe, I would say he's still sort of like maybe on a downswing, or at least in like a lull where he's sort of figuring out what is my next move. Like coaching seems to be working for him, but he reached like arguably the peak of his professional life already.
Maybe.
In terms of a footballer.
Yeah. In terms of a footballer, right.
And I think he's still in the like figuring out what his next move is. And so they are in very different places.
Agreed. And for anyone who's listening to this, and maybe you might be going through something like this, I just want to be clear. And I think you would say the same thing, Marcia. This is also relational maintenance. These are not necessarily reasons that people end relationships. They might be a reason that people choose to end a relationship, but they're also the things that people go through when they're in a long-term relationship, right? Like this is relational maintenance. Sometimes you feel sometimes people want different things. Sometimes you're in different life stages, and ideally you support one another through those things together, but we don't know if that's the choice they're going to make yet. I mean, we're really left with sort of a question mark, I feel like, at the end here.
Yeah, I definitely thought, so if I were to critique the interaction, I would say like, I would have loved to see Keely be like, hey, I want to go so bad. Like, I just can't, and I'll join you for a weekend.
Totally.
Or like, I could go, like there was not a lot of compromise.
For a week?
Yeah. And I do think like, I mean, I think that that's where that's the one place where I'm like, okay, like I love Keely and I want to see her thrive professionally. But if I were like analyzing this, I'm going, you aren't giving him much.
Yeah. And he just bought you tickets to surprise you. Like,
yeah,
she's used to that. I don't know.
Mean, I also like, if I were to critique him, I'd be like, maybe you should have talked to her.
Sure. Agree.
About that. Right. Like she has a professional life. Like, you know, a surprise like that is pretty significant.
Yeah. 6 weeks. Yes.
Yeah. But I think like for her, I'm like, okay, you've got, if you want to be in this relationship, it's okay if like right now your priority is this thing that at some point you're going to get a little bit more of a handle on once the business starts and is up and running, right? Like you're not in panic mode as much, but you still have, if the intention is to stay in this relationship with someone who you've been in relationship with for a year, then you do have to give something. You don't have to give up what is going on, but you do have to give a little bit. And I think that, that's like the one thing that I'm like, you're not fully in this then. Or Keely is not fully in it, is how I read that, where she isn't even able to be like, I'm going to come join you for a weekend, or, you know, I don't know, like, let's go away for a week to get at the start of this or whatever, like the version of that is. Mm-hmm. And I think right now he's dealing with rejection, which is, and he doesn't quite understand how to deal with rejection in that way, because it seems like neither of them have really been in long-term relationships. And so he thinks that means like immediate breakup, instead of maybe that's the start of like a negotiation, which I know sounds businessy, but in relationships, we do negotiate those things.
Yeah. And I was just also going to say, given again, like that humans are messy, right? I mean, I think also her not offering to say like, I could come for a week or I could come for a weekend is just like her unskillful move in that situation. Right. Like ultimately the tickets are just left on the table and it's just feels kind of sad. But I think I want to normalize that we sometimes make unskillful moves in our relationships. Yeah. Like, I think it's easy for us to critique her, but also maybe she just was like surprised and hopefully later, I don't know. I always feel like when that scene ends, I'm like, I hope that you go for a weekend.
Or I hope you guys have more of a conversation about this.
Right? Talk about this more.
Yeah. To her, I want to be like, can you offer something more? And to him, I want to be like, okay, she said no, but like, maybe you should suggest something more here, or like, see, like, ask her what you want to take her away. You want, you know, like, both of them could have approach this with a better, they could have communicated a lot more effectively. And that doesn't mean that, I think what you are saying is, just because they had this interaction and it wasn't great, doesn't mean that if you are in a relationship and you notice something akin to this, you can't like follow up and repair.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, full disclosure, I find myself, you know, I haven't been in a relationship in a while, and being in a relationship again, there's things where like sometimes, and side note, I teach relational communication, so I have very high standards for myself, right? But even still, I will leave an interaction and be like, man, I really messed that up.
Yeah.
I could have done a lot better there. And then there's hopefully you have enough trust with a person that you can be like, I didn't do that in my favorite way. I'd like to, can we talk about that more? Can I try to repair that? You know, like, I think, yeah, the one thing we lose in a, you know, short show like this is these things that then would happen hopefully afterwards.
Yeah. I also do think, like, if Dustin said to me, okay, yeah, take that 6 weeks, you go, you should go, I'll see you in 6 weeks, I'd be like, Jesus, that was cool. Like, I don't know. I would feel a little rejected.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
6 weeks is a long time.
A lot. Let's talk about Roy maybe, and we can bring his side of this into it, because we do love Roy.
I mean, Roy has had this whole episode is just like him being Keely's biggest cheerleader, I felt like.
Which he's amazing at. I mean, I'm just like, can every man take notes on how Roy responds to Keely in almost every interaction? not only every man, can all of us, I should say, but I just am particularly impressed by this man doing it.
Yes, he is just so supportive. Genuinely celebratory and supportive of her at every turn, right? Despite like him being left out of a magazine. And I think like more importantly, it did hurt his, again, feeling. a little bit, but also he didn't burden her with which I thought was like a very kind way of him approaching that. He talked to people about it, right? He was a diamond dog.
Hilariously, right? Yeah.
And like sort of just processed it with friends, which is what friends are for in this case, right? Like it didn't seem like anything serious enough that he needed to talk to Keely about. There's nothing she could do about it. It would have just burdened her and made her feel bad. I think
it bummed her out. I mean, I think she even acknowledged like, oh, you're not in this, babe. Like she acknowledged, they both knew it was kind of unfortunate that he wasn't in there.
Yeah.
On some level, but then he also, you know, is able to see her. He is really able to see her. Right. I mean, even in that conversation, it's like, he believes her about the Jamie thing, which I think is really cool. Like he believes her, he doesn't make it a big weird thing for her about that. Mm-hmm. He is able to see that, like, you know, he even says it might've been weird for me to be in it because it was about her in this way. And he's able to really hold some, you know, have some cognitive complexity in these situations that I think is very sexy and mature.
Yeah.
While still having other feelings.
Yeah. And that you can hold, you know, this is such a perfect example of more than one thing can be true at a time, right? You can hold knowing she belonged in that by herself. It would have been weird if I was there. Like she looks so powerful. She looks so great. And also it's like, I'm a little sad or like whatever the feeling was that I wasn't in it or disappointed or embarrassed, probably a combination of those things.
I'm sure if you've been a superstar who's been also on all sorts of things for so long, it's like real hard on the ego to be like, oh, I wasn't even in the photo. Like for you or me, we might be like, oh, bummer, they left me out.
Like, right.
For someone like him who probably has been in so much and is dealing with his change of identity, I'm sure it's, you know, on one hand, whatever, he's been probably on lots of covers himself, but on the other, or, you know, like been featured in many articles, maybe it's not that big of a deal, but given his trajectory right now and where he's at, like, I can see how he might've felt a little jilted.
Right. And again, I think like such a great example of like, you can feel those things. You can talk about them and also being thoughtful about who you are burdening with that information is important. Like I think of, I've heard this example. I listen to a lot of celebrity interview, like podcasts, like Armchair Expert and stuff, where sometimes the people on it, you know, have like some level of fame and they talk about big moments in their lives. And they also will talk about like bad relationships they've had. And specifically, I've heard this example on so many occasions where people will talk about, most specifically, women. In fact, I think 100% of the time it's been women who will say, yeah, I was with the guy. And anytime I had a big career thing, they would start a fight with me. Mm-hmm. Like I had a big movie premiere. I would have like X, Y, or Z. Like I'm going to an awards show where I'm nominated. And they're like, every time they would start a fight with me, like in the car on the way there. And it always ruined it, right? Like sabotaging because they were feeling inferior and can't deal with it. And I think like that is exactly the opposite of what Roy did here, right? Like, I mean, he felt something, but he didn't make Keely feel bad about it. He dealt with it like a fucking adult. And I think of that, like, you know, choices, right? We make choices, and this choice revealed his character, that like he is this, like this is indicative of who he is. He is a good person.
Yeah. And not only is he a good person, I mean, this very I don't know if I want to call it emotionally intelligent again or sexy or whatever it is, you know, it's like, he does have a feeling. And in addition to that, in a big move for Roy Kent, he asks some other men that doesn't seem like something he's probably done much of before. I guess we don't know, but doesn't seem like it, if he can share his feeling, and they listen, and he is, you know, he even allows himself to be a bit vulnerable. Like, he is going through some, they seem to be changes that are really great for him and anyone around him.
Right. I think he is fully a diamond dog now. I feel like he has kind of created this, you know, network of support, right? Like, this is not the first time he's gone to Ted and Beard and the diamond dogs, period. Right. He went and talked to them when he found out Keely had slept with Jamie, like right before they were about to go on a date, and they gave him sound advice. They listened to him and provided good advice. And so he came back to them, right? Like, he, I don't know, is continuing on with that network of support that he has created for himself. And I mean, again, like, it speaks to those other individuals, right? Like Ted and Beard and Higgins being like providing a trusting, supportive environment as well.
Yeah, where these men who tend to operate, it seems like, in very, like, sort of, in many ways, sort of the masculine, where you almost wouldn't expect for them to be able to seek out that support. I mean, I think that's, again, the brilliance of the show, is where we're modeling seeing somebody who is seems very set in his masculinity, still going to ask for some support. Mm-hmm. and receiving it in a way that allowed him to, it seems like, feel a little bit better.
Yeah, he seems like he has had some healing that comes from it. I think, doesn't he say, like, so sometimes you just talk about things and nothing gets solved? Like, yeah, that's fucking cool.
It's so great.
It's such a good interaction. Yeah. So Roy, I mean, is there anything else about Roy's story that you want to...
No, I think we talked about that sort of end bit already. Yeah. I feel like we see him, like you said, you know, struggling to see where he fits in Keely's life, being worried that they might be breaking up, you know, I mean, we see him feeling a little bit of self-doubt or doubt in the relationship or concern, and we sort of leave off there. We don't actually get that wrapped up in a neat bow.
Yeah, no resolution. Season 3.
Yep. So should we talk about Ted as well?
Yeah, let's talk about Ted, who we opened the episode on. He's sort of dealing with that fallout from the panic attack article. A lot of people are talking about it. He's getting a lot of comments from people. And really, then he goes to the team and he is open and upfront with them and apologizes, which I think, like, seeing leaders apologize to you know, people who they oversee, I think, is a really important thing to model.
There's always
we get this message that, like, somebody who's in a position of leadership, like, can do no wrong, which is like complete and utter bullshit.
Or doesn't make mistakes, or certainly shouldn't, you know. There is the, you know, more, whatever we want to call it, toxic, unskillful masculinity, that you wouldn't let on your weaknesses, that you wouldn't let on a mistake that you made. And he does both, right? He also he does make a mistake, it seems, in not sharing that this is what's actually going on with him and lying about it. But then also is very, apologizes and owns up to the mistake that he made. And that's, again, really excellent.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about Jamie because there isn't really much to talk about with him, but I think, like, it's another, we see it with Jamie too, going to apologize to Roy, right? Like, and Ted doing this here and apologizing to the team. I think what's important to note is, like, the people in this show, I think, do a really nice job of modeling, like, you're not always perfect. Right. Like, Keely did what we wanted. I would arguably say it's perfect when it came to talking to Rebecca about the professional thing. And that was great to watch. And also seeing like, how does somebody recover from not acting in the most ideal way, right? Because inevitably you're going to make mistakes as you are interacting with other humans. It's like impossible to be perfect all the time. And it, like, that recovery is the key, and not getting defensive or not trying to hide things. That's where so much conflict and problem arises, I think. And so that is such a, I think it's really important to acknowledge how they demonstrate that, like, yeah, you're going to fuck up, but like, if you're able to address that in a way that is respectful of the people you may have hurt and take ownership over it and work toward not doing that in the future, like, that is what being a good communicator is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I was looking to see if I had what he said. I tried to write, I didn't write down the whole thing, but the part that I wrote down was him saying, me choosing not to be forthright with you is a bad choice. Every choice is a chance, fellas. I did not give myself a chance to build further trust with y'all. And then he goes on from there. But he really emphasizes this idea of choice. And I think also acknowledges that sometimes we do make bad choices, mm-hmm. or a choice that isn't like the most skillful or whatever, whether we, you know, and that he, yeah, that he gets to keep making new choices, and he asks for their forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course the team forgives him because, you know, they're all on the TED train. And also he's respectful of them.
He's respectful of them. And again, going back to that idea of psychological safety that we've talked about so much, he has created an environment where people can make mistakes and where you, it seems, where people can make mistakes and you can apologize. And he is, he's modeling that in this way as well. I mean, he even goes so far as beyond that to redirect when the team's like, when we find out who did this, we're going to get them, you know, he even redirects from there, and in a very generous move.
Yeah. Very kind. Mm-hmm. I do like watching Nate squirm during that.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is interesting because just, I know we're going to talk about Nate in a minute, but even then he says, let's focus on something else. Like, how about Nate's false nine?
He's giving Nate credit even there.
So I think like seeing Ted reacting to Nate, you know, we see so much of him, or in this episode, we kind of see like, yeah, Ted kind of did mess up, right? He probably should have talked to the team about this. And so we do see his deficiency there that he acknowledges, but then throughout this episode, and it really like, I struggle with this stuff with Nate because he does keep giving Nate credit. He knows it was Nate who told Trent Krim about him, and Nate doesn't know that Ted knows, we think anyway.
Yeah, doesn't seem to, yeah.
And Ted is still being supportive. He's still redirecting the team. He redirects Rebecca when she's like, we're going to find out who it was, right? Like, he is supporting Nate in all these ways that Nate just is not seeing or acknowledging. Know. Yeah. And it's hard. I really struggle with it because I'm like, I feel like I'm pretty good at being critical of these characters despite loving them. And I struggle with seeing where he really went wrong with Nate. I mean, I guess we're kind of talking about Nate now, but
yeah. Well, I do have thoughts, which I think I've mentioned before about that. But either way, I think like just in talking about Ted, even when Nate makes it like incredibly clear, like he does finally, we hear in the conversation with Beard, the thing that we already knew, that he usually likes to let people come to him with mm-hmm. things. And Nate does basically non-verbally come to him by his non-verbals. He doesn't actually come to him. But we do see him decide to step forward in following up with Nate, right? And checking in to be like, what is actually happening with you during that game? And being very straightforward, I like seeing Ted in those ways too. I like it when he is strong and then apologizes to Nate too, you know, we can talk about whether he really needed to apologize, but he does apologize to Nate for the ways that he might've hurt Nate.
Yeah. I think at that point, Nate was not in a position though, that he can hear that. Right. Like, I think that is the space where you get really frustrated, whereas when Ted apologized to the team, like they were in a space where they were able to receive that apology. And I think also they maybe didn't feel as personally, I don't know, attacked as Nate has felt or whatever he is feeling.
Yeah. Neglected.
Yeah. But yeah,
I think Nate was really like, that's a good point. Nate was, if you want to see what it looks like when someone's emotionally flooded, it seems like Nate was like flooded right then. Yeah. He probably couldn't hear what was happening.
And I do wonder, like, if I'm thinking about, I guess if I'm being critical of Ted now, if I'm trying to think of, like, you know, what are the areas that his growth area here, what is he supposed to learn, right? Like, that's what he asks Nate. I mean, this is tough, I think, because I am like, okay, well, Nate is clearly getting increasingly hostile. And like, you really notice it in this episode, right? Like the eye rolling, the like side comments, like his tone, everything about him is hostile. And like, yes. Ted seems to be a quite an observant person. We know he is observing things that like oftentimes he won't let on to. And so he knows that that is all happening. And so I do think like maybe this is one of Ted's deficiencies where he is so much in this mindset of they have to come to me. They have to come to me, that like that doesn't work with everyone. Right. And sometimes you don't learn that this approach doesn't work with everyone until you screw it up and realize like, oh no, this is probably something I should have addressed sooner. Like, you know, Beard is his right hand man. Beard knows.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. That's such a good observation there, that, yeah, this is one of those places where it might not have escalated as much as it did if he were to, if he were to communicate about this. That's interesting. I'm going to think on that more. Yeah. Well, should we talk about Nate? Because I feel like they're pretty intertwined anyway, and that sort of towards the end there.
Yeah. So I have been annoyed at Nate for a while, but this episode I'm just like, why are you such a dick?
I mean, it is a little hard to figure out what's getting worse for him, because it does seem like, I mean, he has been kind of just sucking for a while, but like this episode he certainly, it seems to reach some sort of fever pitch where he just can't keep it together. I wondered, as I was watching it this time and having seen the episode several times now, has he already gotten an offer from Rupert? Like, is there already an offer somewhere in his mind? Because the way he's behaving, he's so critical and he's so done. And I also wonder about those times where, you know, unlike Keely, where Keely is very mature about a leaving situation, does he already know and he's just doing that stuff that people do like when they want the other person to break up with them? You know, like, is he just behaving badly to be like, well, I had to leave because you guys made me, when it's actually just his behavior? I don't know. I just had a lot of questions about why is he so awful this episode?
I mean, I do think he must have some sort. I do think he must have some sort of offer from Rupert at this point, right? Like, the hostility has increased. We already saw Rupert talk to him at the funeral. Like, we knew something was a little up. He's kind of trying to sabotage Ted, right? With talking to Trent Krim about the panic attack. Like, I think that my take on this is like, he probably at the very least has Rupert in his ear, being like, you're the only one who knows anything there. That Ted, the only reason that he is anything is because of you, right? Like, I mean, Rupert,
it seems like it's something's got to be going on because his personality has changed.
Yeah. And I think like this is his hostility in this episode that we're seeing is kind of this last ditch effort to get attention, right? Like, I think it's interesting that at some point in this episode, when Ted is talking to Rebecca and Keely, he's like, hey, all press is good press, right? And I kind of think of like that being Nate's perspective of like, any attention is good attention. I mean, you see this with kids too, right? Like, I have a 4-year-old niece, and sometimes when she wants attention, she throws a tantrum and it's like not pleasant, but you know, kids can't like intellectualize what is going on, right? They just say like, any attention is good because I want attention, whether it's negative or positive.
And so he's like acting out.
I think so. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think of it was a couple episodes ago where Nate was really mean to Colin, remember? Mm-hmm. And Beard witnessed it and called Nate out on it. And he goes, "Are you going to tell Ted?" Mm-hmm. And it's interesting now looking back on that scene because when I originally watched it, I'm like, "Oh, he's worried." And now I'm watching it going, I actually think he's like, "Oh, yes. Like, I'm going to get attention." Like, it was almost, it was not like, "Oh no, don't tell Ted." It was like, "Yes, please tell Ted."
Okay, God, now I got to rewatch that. Yeah.
That's just what I was thinking when I watched it this time around.
Yeah.
It seems like he wants attention, right? Like, that's what he says he's not getting from Ted.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently. Apparently. I mean, it also to me just seems like, I mean, maybe that's what he wants. It seems also like he, to me, has already made up his mind that like, this is not where he's going to be anymore. But I mean, we see in the Diamond Dogs conversation. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's trying to get attention. I don't know what's happening when he says to Roy that he kissed Keely, and Roy's like, "Yeah, it's okay, man." he just seems like really taken aback by that.
I think that there are a lot of little moments throughout, especially the second season of the show, where like he is dissed in small ways and infantilized in small ways and looked at as like not a romantic threat, right? Like they're peppered in. And I think like this is a good example of how, you know, like pressure over time, right? Like one of these instances taken in isolation would not be a big deal, but over and over the comments about that's the suit Ted got you, a grown man buying you a suit, that's infantilizing, right? Like there's, you know, immediately they give Roy, they say like, "Roy, you're going to be in that office with Nate." Like they don't go, "Nate, can Roy share the office with you?" None of it felt at the time that bad, right? You're like, yeah, like there's only one other desk. Of course you'd be in there with Nate, or I don't know, like Roy forgiving him with no anger about that. Like, I think that speaks even more to Roy's security with Keely than the way he looks at Nate, right? Mm-hmm. Like to me, that's how I read it. But to somebody who's insecure, like Nate, he's like, "They don't even see me as a threat."
Yeah, it's real. It's, I mean, again, like in the more than one thing can be true, it seems like some of those things are maybe more intentional microaggressions, and then others, it feels like he's receiving them as such, whether that was the intention or not. It didn't seem like it with Roy. It seems like he's just like, "Yeah, I'm over it." I can see why Nate is having a hard time, but I don't agree with why he's having. I mean, I think the insecure point is a really big one. And then of course he, you know, has this big sort of temper tantrum at the end.
Right. I mean, and he even looks like a child having a temper tantrum, doesn't he? Like the way he wipes his tears away. And I think has a real lack of perspective. I think something about that last speech that Nate gives that I always think about, and you know, it resonated with me again listening to it, was he basically says, "I earned this. I belong here," right? Like
you belong
back with your son, but he said, "You're a fucking joke. You should be back in Kansas where you belong with your son. I belong here. This didn't fall into my lap. I earned this," which is objectively not true. That's the opposite of what happened. He didn't necessarily earn this. He was a kit man and Ted saw something in him. Mm-hmm. Nate didn't earn. I mean, he did in that like he had good ideas, but it literally fell into his lap.
I know that is, it is. And it, yeah, not any more or less so than Ted being chosen for the team to be the manager, right? Like it's like yeah, what the whatever he has like built in his mind.
Yeah.
And go earlier in that monologue that he has, he says something about, you made me feel like I was the most important person in the world, and then you abandoned me. And I think that is just another point that I, when we were talking about this earlier, I wanted to make, and I think I've said this before, maybe just you and I talking one-on-one, but it is really challenging because in this season, we see Ted struggling with so many other things, right? We see Ted going to therapy. We see Ted going through all of these other things. And I do think that this is a really good reminder of like not always taking things personally, because Nate is definitely taking this personally, right? Whereas we know as the audience that Ted's been working through so many other things. Like granted, I'm going to give Ted the benefit of the doubt here, but I wouldn't guess that Ted was trying to ignore Nate. I think Ted was working out some of his own stuff, but Nate was giving it a meaning, assigning a meaning. The story he was making up in his mind was, you abandoned me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really challenging.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I think that is a really well-made point that, you know, I listen to the Brené Brown podcast a lot, and mm-hmm. she, in one of the ones I was listening to recently, she basically posed this question that she had posed to her therapist, which is, do you think people are generally doing their best?
Ooh, I got to listen to that one.
Yeah. Or doing is the best they can, or what, you know, something to akin to that. Okay. And it is, it's a hard thing when you start wrestling with that, because yeah. you're like, well, I would like them to do fucking better. But then
yeah.
you start, you know, like you think of people, especially when they're not showing up in ways that are very good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, but yeah, people are doing the best they can. It like more than one thing can be true, right? They can be doing their best, and it can still be really frustrating to deal with. Yeah. And
it can also not be good enough.
Yes, exactly. Right. Like, and if that's the case, and this is what, you know, she talked about in that podcast episode, is if that is the case, if their best, what they are doing, is not good enough, then that's where it's on us to set our own boundaries around them.
Yeah. I have another thought about this, but did you have I don't want to interrupt you from a point you were trying to make.
So, I mean, just to tie this to what you were saying with Nate not having the perspective, right? Like he doesn't yeah. know everything that is going on with Ted, which we have the luxury of knowing as an audience, knowing mm-hmm. that like, it's not that Ted is trying to disconnect from the team or from anyone, but like he had some shit that he really had to work out. And like, it wasn't about any one person. It was about him dealing with his own kind of demons, right? Or his trauma, yeah. or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And I think like we see that exemplified in Nate mentions the photo that he gave Ted, right? Yeah. The photo of them. And I think that that's such a perfect way of demonstrating how Nate doesn't see everything, because Ted had that photo on his dresser next to the photo of his son. That in the episode, the funeral episode, they show that just a quick shot.
Okay.
Yeah. And the only reason I remember it is because the first time I watched this episode, I remember thinking like, but I remember we just saw that photo somewhere.
Oh, interesting.
So we saw it. He actually has it in this like
in a special important spot.
Yeah. Right. And mm-hmm. Nate doesn't see that. He just sees that he doesn't have it on his desk. Right. And yeah. like, you don't always have all the information. Mm-hmm. And like you know, like perfect example of Nate doesn't have all the information, and he is making his judgments off of only part of the story.
Mm. Oh gosh. And like, in terms of just communication principle that's screaming at me as I listen to this, is like, perception checking is really important, right? If yeah. you are a person who is feeling like you're frustrated with somebody else and you're starting to make up a story about what is happening, you know, if we were to gently or firmly discuss with Nate the situation, it would be like, did you talk to Ted about what was happening? Like, no, I'm trying to think, is there any point that we see Nate checking in with Ted to like ask if Ted's okay, or like find out what's going on with Ted, or like go out of his way to check this perception that he's clearly and more firmly developing in his mind?
No. Yeah. And I do, this I have read in an article or listened to somebody talking about in relation to the show. And I do think that this is well done. So the last time, other than this episode where they have this one-on-one conversation, the last time we see Nate and Ted talking one-on-one, where it's just the two of them, is the scene where Ted apologizes to Nate in season one. Right. Like, so, I mean, there has been a big chunk of time where we have not seen the two of them interacting one-on-one. So, I mean, I think what that helps demonstrate is like, again, more than one thing is true. Ted probably is a little bit more distant from Nate. I think arguably that could be because he's like, Nate's on a path. He's like doing great tactically. He's, you know, one of our great assistant coaches. And like, and I have some shit to deal with.
And part of the Diamond Dogs, right? Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Ted also doesn't strike me as someone who, like helps create these systems of support for other people and then kind of exits, right? Like that's sort of what a coach does, especially at high level. They don't often stay with programs indefinitely. Like they'll come, do some things. And it's like, he created the Diamond Dogs that is supportive, you know, supporting all of those guys. And it's almost like he could then just be plucked out of it and that system still exists.
Yeah.
And it's like Nate was like, but I want the one-on-one. It definitely seems like he is, the story in his head that he has written is Ted is a fraud, which does feel like that was amplified by whatever Rupert has been saying to him. I mean, Nate is a grown man who can, you know,
draw conclusions on his own. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I don't want to put all the blame on Rupert, even though he's an evil genius, but I do think like you definitely see his impact here, but like the way Nate is rolling his eyes at the team, like rallying behind this idea and the way he's just sitting and like, doesn't seem celebratory.
The way he stalks off the field at the end when they do well, you know,
they get promoted. Like that is a really big deal. Yeah.
He's not celebrating. He is.
No. He's out.
Yeah. He's out. And of course we see that he's found a new team.
Yeah.
And not only any new team. I mean, I feel like we just have to pause on this. Like for as kind as Keely and Rebecca were about that change, not only does Nate find a new team, but he knows on some level, he knows a choice that he's making by going to Rupert's team. Right. And, and maybe Rupert knows that. Maybe we'll find out in the next season that like, there's a whole backstory that we're going to have a lot more empathy for Nate. I hope so. But right now it's like, you know what you're doing. I mean, Rebecca says to Keely, the one thing, please don't work for Rupert's team.
Yeah. It's a betrayal. It's a betrayal. Yeah. And I think he knows that, like, I think he just doesn't care, or he's so hurt and blinded by rage, which, you know, Rebecca was at the start of this show. True, so true. Like we've seen people rebound from that. Hopefully we'll see that with Nate.
Yeah. Oof. Well, end of season two. Do you have any last like thoughts that we haven't gotten to say about season two?
I don't think so. I mean, I really love it.
Me too.
And I am excited for season three, which is already airing technically.
Yeah. I remember at the end of this one being like, okay, well, that wasn't like, they give you the satisfaction of them getting promoted. Like you get those feelings, but then you're also like, oh, but now I have to wait until what's going to happen next. But now we're there, everyone. So if you are following along with us, you probably are also watching season three. Or if you haven't yet, it's out, y'all.
Yeah, the first few episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or more by the time this airs.
Yeah, by the time this comes out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can just, if you're ready to know what happens next, go on over to season three. And did you have a favorite Tedism or anything else you want to say?
I feel like... Oh, yes. It's not a Tedism, but it's an exchange between Beard and Nate. Nate is that right after Nate told Roy that he kissed Keely, and Roy's like, it's fine. And Nate's like, no. Blah, blah, blah. And he goes, I deserve to be headbutted. And Beard goes, I'll headbutt you, Nate.
Oh my gosh, that is a great line. That's funny. I think one of my favorite lines is also from Beard this season or this episode, sorry, where he says to he's trying to tell Ted to talk to Nate, and he says, "No, it'll help you, Coach. If you keep holding this in, I'm afraid your mustache is gonna fall off." And then there's a beat, and he's like, "And I like your mustache."
I like that one too. All right. Those are good ones to end on.
Thanks so much for listening to the PS Let's Talk Love podcast.
We want to send out a special thank you to Medium Build for our show music.
And if you enjoy this podcast, follow us anywhere you listen to podcasts. And if you want to support us, it's super helpful if you could give us a 5-star rating and leave us a review sharing what you're loving right now. Really, we want to know.
And if you don't like it and you got this far, don't worry. You do not have to listen to us again. You can just forget this podcast exists and move along.
You can catch up with us on Instagram at ps.welovelove or follow us on TikTok at psconsulting.
If you're interested in private coaching or learning more about our online classes, go to pscurators.com to learn more and find free resources to support you.
See you next time.